These days you can't open the newspaper, listen to the radio, or watch the news without some new report about the devastating effects of climate change and global warming. Just this past week in the New York Times, there were no less than 10 articles, 10 stories about the effects of global warming or climate change. And one of these stories claimed that global warming is causing an increase in the number and the intensity of wildfires in North America, particularly up in Canada, that threatens to wipe away the forests. Here's an excerpt from the article. Just listen to what they're predicting, the woe that they're saying is coming. Scientists have been warning for decades that climate change is a threat to the immense tracts of forests that ring the northern hemisphere. With rising temperatures, drying trees, and earlier melting of snow contributing to a growing number of wildfires. Scientists say the overall increase in fire in the northern regions would not be happening without global warming. It goes on to say experts fear that more fires and more soot could further accelerate the melting of the ice sheet, which has the potential, should it disintegrate entirely, to raise a global sea level by more than 20 feet. Wow. Every day there is a new study, there is a new discovery in the news predicting gloom and doom, telling us if things don't change, if we don't change as a global community, if we don't start acting responsible as a human race, the earth will no longer be able to sustain us. They're telling us that the earth is sick and it's only getting worse. Several weeks ago, diplomats from at least 167 countries came together in New York to sign what is called the Climate Accord. The Climate Accord was drawn up at the United Nations Climate Change Conference. Probably didn't know that they had one of those, right? It was in Paris in December. In an effort to make an agreement with all the nations, it was sort of like contractually binding. Everyone would promise that they would do everything that they could to lower the greenhouse effect, to limit the carbon emissions that they're pouring into the atmosphere, so that somehow we might be able to save the world. We might be able to save the earth. This is what President Obama had said. Together we've shown what's possible when the world stands as one. It is the best chance to save the one planet we have. The chairman of the group representing some of the world's poorest countries, they came together, and this is what he said. We are living in unprecedented times which call for unprecedented measures. It is the best outcome we could have hoped for, not just for the least developed countries, but for all citizens of the world. The hope and belief is that if we just work together, if we put this on everyone's newsfeed every single day, then we'll change. And when we change, we'll be able to change the trajectory of where the world is headed. We'll be able to save planet Earth. That's the belief. That if we just do enough, we just become more responsible as a global community, we can save planet Earth. Brothers and sisters, what we have to realize is that no matter how much information we have, no matter how much a scientific, geological community tells us about what's happening or what's about to happen, no matter how many global leaders come together and make an agreement, how many contracts that we sign, the reality is we are not going to be able to save the earth. We can't. Nothing that we do, is going to be able to save planet Earth. And the reason is because we as a human race, we didn't just warm the Earth. What the Bible tells us, brothers and sisters, is our presence cursed the Earth. We're not just warming the Earth. We cursed it. We cursed it. That's what the Bible tells us. And it tells us that's what happened in the very beginning. In the beginning of the story of the world, Genesis tells us, it starts off like a beautiful fairy tale. Everything was beautiful. Everything was perfect. It was a story of a creative genius who was all-powerful, who made the world. And the world was a beautiful, perfect place. God was not just the architect and the engineer who created a perfectly sound structure. He was also the artist who made it beautiful. So you had this infrastructure, but you also had the aesthetics. And that's what Genesis tells us, what happened and how God did it. Genesis tells us after each day of God's creative activity, he sat back, he looked over what he did, and everything was perfect. It was good. It was pleasing. It was pleasing to him. It was exceedingly good. It radiated glory. And what this means is more than just it was the fact that it was like pleasing to God. It meant that everything in creation worked in perfect harmony. There was no distress. There was no problems. There was not a monkey wrench that was like making everything kind of clunk and clutter along. There was perfect harmony. There was balance. And there was peace. There was shalom. Everything was beautiful. And on the final day of creation, God finished it off with the pinnacle of his creation, Adam and Eve, humanity. They were created in the image of God. That's what Genesis tells us. Adam and Eve weren't just the climax of creation in the sense that they were on top of the food chain. Like they were the best of everything that God had created. Like they were the top. They were the pinnacle, the climax of creation in the sense that they were the reason everything else that came before happened. In other words, because God wanted to create Adam and Eve, he needed to create creation because creation was going to be the perfect environment to place them in so that they could grow, so that they could excel, so that they could mature, so that they could accomplish everything that God created them to accomplish. Creation was there so that Adam and Eve and everyone who would come after them would be able to be blessed and they would flourish. I want you to imagine a young couple who's preparing for you know, a new addition to the family, right? They get a room. They paint that room first. Well, first they vacuum it, they clean it, whatever, right? They clean the walls, take off the wallpaper, whatever was there before. They clean it off, paint the room till it's like pink or blue or something really bright, something that's going to really capture, I don't know, the baby's attention. Not really the baby's, it's more the parents, right? Then they put a crib in there. Then all the fixing, they get everything ready because there's this, they want to prepare before the baby comes, not just the room, but the whole house. They want to prepare it, the perfect environment for their baby to be placed in there like a plush pillow. Well, you wouldn't put a baby on a pillow, right? it will choke. You wouldn't put, but you get my point. Now, how odd would it be, folks? How odd would it be if you had a baby room and you had all the fixings with no baby? It doesn't make sense, right? The whole reason that you have it is so that there would be is to introduce and to be a perfect place for this baby. Well, that's what creation is. That's why God created the world. That's why he created the whole universe. Not to just show off his architectural and artistic beauty, so that this would be the perfect place, the perfect environment for Adam and Eve. And that's what it was. That's why God created the world, so that the world would be a blessing to humanity. But something happened in this story. Something went terribly wrong. Because Adam and Eve, as they were created to reflect the image and glory of God, as they were called to rule the earth, as they were called to reflect God's beauty and worship him as God, they wanted to be God. And so what happened was, in the rebellion against God, they sinned. And the moment they sinned, everything changed. The moment they sinned, something happened inside of them. Their perfect bodies were sickened. Something broke. You know how it is when you get something new, say it's a car or a blender or a phone. It's brand new, right? And then something happens to it. Maybe you drop it, you accidentally, you know, put some water, spill some water on it, or you do something, run over something, right? And then right after that, what happens? Like, it just doesn't sound right. It's still running, but you know that there's something wrong with it. You know that something is off in under the hood. You can't really pinpoint it because you don't have the expertise to understand all the little trinkets and mechanisms that are supposed to be working together to make the engine hum. You don't know what's going on, but you know that there is something wrong. Well, that's what happened to Adam and Eve. They didn't know exactly what was wrong, but the moment they sinned, all of a sudden, they had these feelings that they never had before of shame and fear and anger and jealousy. And even bits of rage. They never had this feeling before, but all of a sudden, they were flooded with it. And it's not like they died immediately, but they knew that something was off. And that's what happened when sin entered the world. Death didn't come and immediately wipe everything out. But it was kind of a slow death. Slow death by sickness. A sickness where there was no medication or resolution for it. And the thing is, this sickness, it didn't just stop with Adam and Eve. The sickness started to infect everything around them. Everything that they touched, every place that they went, it started to be infected with this thing called sin. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 17 through 19, this is what Genesis tells us. To Adam, he said, that is God. To Adam, he said, because you listened to your wife and ate fruit from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through pain, toil, you will eat food from it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground. Since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. Well, Genesis shows us in a very artistic way is that the moment that sin entered the world, it wasn't just Adam and Eve and something inside of them that went off. It was the whole world. Something went off. There was a clunking, a cluttering. It wasn't humming. It wasn't harmonious, or at least not as harmonious as before. It wasn't totally ruined because there was still beauty in it, and you could see beauty in it. As you look at creation, there's still beauty there. There's still a degree of harmony. there is still a degree where you look at it, it just takes your breath away. And it points you back to the architect and the artist. But it's not perfect. Because if you have the eyes to see, you can see that there's something wrong with it still. There's something off. It's not a blessing. It doesn't seem like it's blessed. And if you take a closer look, you can see that it's actually cursed. And it's cursed not because the architect made a mistake where his mathematics was a little off. It wasn't because the artist ran out of color and he had to just adapt with what he had. It was off because of us. It was off because of sin. I don't care, brothers and sisters, I don't care how many laws are passed, how many agreements are made, how many promises that government officials or people who are in authority, they keep. It doesn't matter if the whole world collectively agreed that we would no longer burn fossil fuels. We may, this is just a big possible, may be able to lower global warming if it's actually happening. I'm not saying that it is or it isn't. I'm just putting that out there. If it's happening, and if we do this, and if we lower down the atmospheric temperature of the whole world, we will still not save the world. We can't save it. Because the problem isn't the fuel that we burn. The problem, brothers and sisters, is us. We will always still be here. And because we will always still be here, the earth and the world will always still be cursed. Because it is cursed, we can't save it. We didn't just warm the earth, brothers and sisters. We cursed it. But God didn't just leave it to be judged and leave us to be judged. Though he could have and though he should have, he didn't abandon the broken world that we ruined. What he did was he sent his son into the sin-infected, cursed world, not to clean it, but to be cursed. I want you to think about that. He went into the world not to just show that he was perfect and set apart from the world, though he was. He went into the world and he actually absorbed the curse that came upon the world. He not only showed that he was not sick like us, what he did was he actually touched us and he took our sickness from us. He absorbed it in his life. When he went on the cross and he died, he defeated it. He did it for us. And you know what he said? All we needed to do to remove the curse? You know what he said? All you have to do is recognize that you are cursed. Recognize that you can't do anything to reverse the curse. Recognize that I am cursed for you, because of you, and when you do that, your curse is removed. And it's, and my death reverses it. And it reverses it in your life. Not only does it reverse it in your life, but it will reverse it in everything that you touch. And all you have to do is recognize it. You have to recognize that you're cursed and that everything that you touch is cursed. That's all you have to do. Recognize that he came to be your curse. Listen to what Romans chapter 8, listen to what Paul tells us. Because he personifies creation. He personifies creation as that factor or that being that recognized that it was cursed because of us. But the creation also recognizes that it will be redeemed when we are redeemed. So listen to what he says. In Romans chapter 8, verse 19, he says, "For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God." That's us. "The creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God, for the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and to obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now." Imagine this. In Genesis chapter 1, chapter 2, creation is created. Creation, if you can picture, is personified like a real person. Creation accepted, received Adam and Eve, blessed Adam and Eve, was to be blessed by Adam and Eve. But once Adam and Eve, once they sinned and rebelled against God, they were cursed, and they cursed creation. And ever since creation was cursed, Paul says, it has been longing because it knows what we never knew before. It knew that once God redeemed the world through the second Adam, that is Jesus, that the second Adam would reverse the curse, not to just all Adams, not to just all Eves, but to the creation itself. So creation has been waiting with eager anticipation for the reverse of the curse until we are set free from our bondage. The creation recognizes what so many of us refuse, that we are cursed. See, the thing is, if we don't admit that we're cursed, if we don't trust in the one who took our curse in the gospel, then what God is going to do is he's going to do everything that he can to show us that we are cursed. Do you hear me? If we don't recognize that we're cursed, if we don't know that we're sick, what God's going to do is he's going to do everything that he can to awaken us from our slumber, to help us recognize that we are, in fact, sickened, that there is something, in fact, wrong with us, that we are cursed. And he's just going to turn up the volume louder and louder and louder. And this is not God's judgment. This is not God's anger. This is not God's wrath. It is his love. It is his love. Because I want you to imagine, if you are sick with a terminal disease, a disease that is so serious that you will die because of it, if there is not an intervention on your behalf, but it is something that you not only don't know you're infected with, but something that you are refusing to be to acknowledge that you're infected with, even if there are sure signs of it, then what's going to happen is your doctor or your wife or your husband or your daughter, your son, or your mother, your father, they're going to do everything in their power to let you know that you're not okay. They're going to sound the trumpet, the clarion call. Because the worst thing that could happen is for you to be sick and think that you're not sick. Does that make sense? Because if you don't know you're sick, you don't admit that you're sick, you will never get well. You can't get well. The curse of sin and shame and guilt and death, all of that is something that we are infected with. Brothers and sisters, God isn't just standing around waiting until maybe, possibly, we come to admit it finally. Out of his love, he's going to do everything that he can to show it. What he does, what Revelation chapter 8 tells us, is he sends angels to blow the trumpet, the seven trumpets. John in Revelation 8, you thought I was never going to get here, right? John in Revelation 8 sees the angel of the Lord, and he comes and he blows a trumpet. A trumpet, folks, if you did not know, is an instrument that was used in ancient times for many different purposes. It was to sound battle cry. It was to announce an important event. It was to call people to attention. The trumpet was used as a clarion call to show everyone that something was happening. My brother used to play the trumpet. And when I say he used to play the trumpet, I use that term play very loosely. He played the trumpet for 1 year. He had a trumpet and he blew it at home. And it was the most annoying thing that could, it sounded like an animal was dying. That's the best way that I could. It was not music. It was just noise. And when he played it, everyone knew he was playing it. And everyone wanted him to stop. By God's grace, it was only 1 year that he played the trumpet. But that's what a trumpet is, right? That's what a trumpet does. Now, I know that there are some great trumpet players that make great music, but you don't normally use trumpet music to lull a baby to sleep, right? You just don't do that, right? Because that's not what a trumpet does. A trumpet calls everyone to attention. And what God is doing was he was announcing. He sounded not just one, not just two, not just three, but seven trumpets. What is he announcing? He's announcing through creation the first four trumpets. The first four trumpets that he's announcing through creation is to the world, not to believers, but to the world who has deaf ears, who refuse to accept that we are cursed. The very creation that we cursed, he's using creation to show us that we are cursed. It was a clarion call. Read with me. Now the seven angels who had seven trumpets prepared to blow them. The first angel blew his trumpet, and there followed hail and fire mixed with blood, and these were thrown upon the earth, and a third of the earth was burned up, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. The second angel blew his trumpet, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea. And a third of the sea became blood. A third of the living creatures in the sea died. And a third of the ships were destroyed. Verse 10, the third angel blew his trumpet. And a great star fell from heaven, blazing like a torch. And it fell on the earth. It fell on a third of the rivers, on the springs of the water. The name of the star is Wormwood. And a third of the waters became wormwood. And many people died from the water because it had been made bitter. And the fourth angel blew his trumpet. And a third of the sun was struck. And a third of the moon. And a third of the stars. So that a third of their light might be darkened. And a third of the day might be kept from shining. and likewise a third of the night. God was using creation as a trumpet to announce something that the world was largely ignoring, refusing to believe. That not only was the creation cursed, but the creation was cursed because of them. And folks, don't you see? That's what God has been doing from the beginning of creation. What do they call tornadoes and hailstorms and hurricanes? An act of God. Because maybe it is. I mean, that's not why they say it's an act of God. But it is. And I'm not saying that every one of those is an outpouring of God's wrath, punishment for specific sins of either a collective community or even individuals. What I'm saying is, creation is cursed. It has been cursed by us, but it's also used to show for those of us who don't realize it that we are cursed. And God's going to continue to use it to show us that we're not in control. No, we can't save it. No agreement, no promise, no movement, no new technology. It's not going to help us. We can't save it because we're cursed. What we need to recognize is that we're cursed. And that, brothers and sisters, is what God is going to continue to sound. Two points of application as we close. If we live in a world that is cursed, then there are times, even as believers, when we're going to feel like we're part of the curse. It's a reality. If you're a believer today, if you have trusted in the gospel, if you have trusted in the one who took your curse, brothers and sisters, what you need to do is not worry about all the frustrations that happen in life. Don't worry about the things that are out of your control that just happen because of Mother Nature. Because it's going to happen. Living in a world that has been infected and is broken, we're going to feel the effects of that brokenness. It's okay. You don't have to read much into it like somehow is God trying to hurt you or discipline you or is God mad at you? That's just not the case. Sometimes things are going to happen that, at least this side of heaven, is just unexplainable. Because the world that we live in is cursed. And in a weird way, folks, that's kind of comforting. That's kind of comforting. Because we don't have to read into everything. And in fact, that's really hopeful. Because what it gives to us, it gives to us like a, it gives to us like a foundation of faith. Because the very creation that was left longing and groaning for the release from its shackles of the curse is something that the Apostle Paul wants us to resonate with. Sometimes we go through things in life that are unexplainable, that are just hard, that are just a result of the fall. And what God gives to us is this experience to give us eyes of faith to help us long for a time when not only when creation will be released, but also when we will be released. Because we will. So don't worry about the pain. Don't worry about getting all the things that are so broken in order and fixed. Because some things will never be fixed. What it gives to us is a hope that one day, when all is said and done, when he returns and we're redeemed, that we will be released. And that's what we look forward to. Secondly, if you haven't trusted in the gospel, you kind of sort of know that there's something wrong, but you haven't really acknowledged the curse. And you haven't trusted in the one who has come to take your curse. My exhortation is this. Will you trust in the one who takes your curse? He wants to take it. Because I promise you this. God loves you so much that he is unrelenting. He is going to work in your life to get your attention. He's going to work somehow, some way to show that this life is really broken, that you're broken, and you're unfixable. No amount of seminars, no amount of therapy sessions, no amount of nothing. It's not going to fix it. He's going to get your attention. He's going to constantly sound the trumpet. Will you answer? Because, folks, these are only four of the trumpets. There are other trumpets to come. He's not only going to use creation, he's going to use everything. So would you hearken? Would you hearken? Would you answer the call? Would you tell God, you don't have to sound the trumpet anymore. Put down the trumpet. I know there's a problem. All you have to do is trust in the gospel. Will you do that? Let's pray.